Dear friends of Jesus Christ, in this passage from Exodus, Moses gives voice to two of the deepest longings of the human heart. In verse 13, he says, "Show me your ways, that I may know you and find favor with you." And then in verse 17, he says, "Show me your glory, I pray." So those two things, to show me your ways and to show me your glory. Now, to understand the force of this, it seems important to understand the backdrop, the background. I think most of us are familiar with the story, but in the previous chapter, chapter 32, we're told that while Moses is communing with God up on the mountain, the people of Israel, tired of waiting, demand that Aaron make for them a golden calf, a god they can see. And we are told that when Aaron had finished making the calf, that the people went wild. And God's anger burns within him. And he says to Moses, I am done with these people. I will start over with you. And then Moses intercedes for the people and prays that God be merciful. And God agrees, because Moses is one who has found favor with God. So right at the beginning of God's relationship with his people, there's trouble. It's like a honeymoon. And on the honeymoon, angry words are exchanged. Or it's like you haven't left the church parking lot and you're seething with anger or overcome with jealousy or lust. At the very beginning, things go awry. And then at the beginning of chapter 33, God says to Moses, "Okay, now you and your people, you go and I will have an angel go ahead of you. But I'm not going to be among you. For if I were to come among you, I would consume you. For you are a stiff-necked people." And then we're told that when the people of Israel hear that God will no longer go among them because they are a stiff-necked people, they are downcast and they mourn and grieve. And then there's this little sort of interruption about a meeting tent, and then it picks up where Cecilia began to read. Namely, Moses and God have this incredible conversation, which is both at one side seemingly very primitive, and on the other side full of, it's very sublime. And it's a wonderful, this conversation. Moses says to God, "Now look, you've said to me, bring up this people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me." Who is this angel anyway, so to speak? "You have said, I know you by name, and you have also found favor in my sight," you say. So Moses is in effect saying, "Look, God, you've said now that we're friends. It'd be like you and me saying, look, through Christ's blood, you've adopted us as children. Given that," Moses says, "show me your ways and let me know you so that I may find favor with you. Show me your ways." Now, that request is not at all uncommon in the Scriptures. I mean, the Psalms, for instance, just as an example, in Psalm 25, verse 4, the psalmist says, "Make us to know your ways, O God. Teach us your paths." Then in Psalm 86, verse 11, "Teach me your ways, Lord, and I will walk in your truth." Teach me your ways. That's what Moses now is asking. Teach me your ways. Now, what's the sense of that? What do you understand to mean by that? One person I read says that as he understands it, Moses is here asking for a kind of preview of where he has to take his people, kind of an overview. I mean, the land that they are to the cross is uncharted. There are places where there is no food or water. There will be situations where people are likely to lose all hope. So give me kind of a bird's eye view. Where are you thinking of taking us? But see, I don't think Moses is here asking for a kind of divine map quest. What he's asking is that he be taught the things that are on God's heart. That he come to know God's desires. That he come to know how God thinks about things. It's very much, of course, with Mount Sinai there. It's very much a question about God's will. But it's not just the Ten Commandments or all those rules and regulations. It's a more intimate kind of knowledge. Show me your way. Show me how your heart is leaning. I want to get to know you. I want to find favor with you. And when you think about that, there are a couple of things that strike me as terribly important. For one thing, nearly every situation where you must make a decision, you will find that there are no rules or laws that will really tell you what to do. I mean, as a student, which major to make your major? How to resolve some conflict in a relationship? How to spend your money? I mean, there are these basic rules that can guide you, but in the you know, the rough and tumble of life, in all of the decisions that you make every day, that there are no rules or regulations. And now Moses says, I want to know how you think about this. I want to be in communion with you. And that's why when God says in response to Moses' request, my presence will go with you, it's exactly the right answer. Because by God promising Moses that his presence will go with him, God is saying, we will have an ongoing conversation. This will be an ongoing kind of thing. I will be there when you make these difficult journeys, and I will be there to walk you through them. I will be there to talk you through them. I will be there with you. My presence will go with you. The word presence, by the way, is simply the Hebrew word for face. My face will be there with you. What Moses is praying for here, it seems to me, is wisdom. This biblical wisdom that reflects on life by listening always to God, by keeping in mind always that God is in the picture and that I am his child. And in that sense, I come to know God. Have you ever noticed in some conversations, you're not really present? Or there are people who are in conversation with you and you don't feel they're present to you. They're saying things that almost seem scripted. That they ask you things that they're not really interested in. You're not in the moment together. You know what I mean? You've been that way. You've had that experience done to you. You're not in conversation. And now Moses says, I want to be in conversation with you. And I need to know the Ten Commandments and all of your rules, and I need to know what other people think. But above all, I want to know how now your desires need to be expressed here in this decision. And so this coming to know you is not, it's not just something that you can say, well, I'll come to know him then. It's a process, just like a marriage. You get to know one another. Moses wants to know God, and it strikes me as such a profoundly right prayer for us to ask. That there may be this ongoing conversation, this listening, this hearing, this testing, wanting to know, God, what is it that is on your heart? What would delight you here? And so when Moses hears that God says, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. Some commentators are kind of puzzled with this, and I will give you rest. What in the world would that mean? It seems quite plain to me. God promises not only his presence, but because of his presence, the fear of abandonment, the fear of being stuck out there by himself or yourself, it won't happen. I will be there. My presence will go with you. And Moses says something very interesting. He says, look, if the truth of the matter is, dear God, if you weren't going with us, don't bother with this journey. Because your presence is what makes us distinct. Your presence is what your presence is what defines us. See, and again, as you try to live your life into that, you say, yes, that's exactly right. I know that there are atheists who find, because of evolution, for instance, that their position is intellectually satisfying and respectable. And that may well be true. But we say, if that cross is not signifying something about the heart of God, and if this table does not say something about our future, then don't bother me with this life. It's a horror show. It doesn't mean anything. The thing that defines me has been robbed from me. If you don't go with me, God, if this whole thing is but a hoax, you and I trying our best to make some sense of things, to get some meaning to our lives, then don't bother me. If you don't go with us, and then God says, Moses, I will do everything you ask, for you have found favor with me. I'm just very fond of you. Such a wonderful thing. I'm just very fond of you. You know, there are five places in this short passage where this business of God saying, you have found favor with me. And you see, as New Testament believers, we say that in Christ, through Christ, we have found favor with God. And he says to him, I'm just so very fond of you. And my presence will go with you. And I will give you rest. And then Moses says, show me your glory, I pray. Now, even if you're not at all familiar as to what that might mean exactly, I mean, we all sense, I think, that there is something deep and sublime in this request. Show me your glory. I mean, the word glory in the Hebrew means your weight. What is it that makes you you? What's the essence? You know, sometimes a child on a bike is having so much fun because she's good at it and she's learned it. And you say, she's in her glory. This is her. She's in her element. This is who she is, or this is who they are. And now Moses says, I wanna look you in the eye and see who you are. Moses wants a kind of a, you know, an encounter of the third kind. No longer veiled, but unveiled. No longer hidden in the smoke or the fire, but eye to eye. Moses wants what the Apostle Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 13. Remember that wonderful passage where Paul says, now we see through a glass darkly, but then we shall see face to face. Moses wants a face-to-face. And then God says, I will pass all my goodness in front of you. And I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy. And show grace to whom I will show grace. And I will speak my name, the Lord. Now, but my face you cannot see. Now, there's so much here. The first thing that has, you know, I don't know how much weight I should put on this, but here's one of those really interesting things, I think. In the English, you know, you have the word, show me your ways, and then show me your glory. But as a matter of fact, in the Hebrew, those are two different words. In the Hebrew, the first, show me your ways, is yada, which has this sense of show me in order that I may understand. Show me so that I may become acquainted. In the second instance, show me your glory. It's not yada, it's raha. And, you know, I just have these lexicons so I can look these words up. And that word says, show me to behold, to see. And then I was reflecting on that. It occurred to me, for instance, it separates us, this desire just to see, to behold, from the animal world. You know, boys and girls, I've talked about my dog before to you. Here's another instance where Scout, the dog's name, can make an illustration. Because I do not think she looks at beauty. She just doesn't have an eye for beauty. About a month and a half ago, she and I were walking through the fields. It was one of these, like so many of these summer days, beautiful. And we were in a field that was covered, now, this is true, with purple flowers. And I'm just sort of taken by how beautiful it is. And Scout, instead of sitting back and just taking it all in, is straining on the leash, smelling the ground. No eye for beauty. And I Googled this. Dogs may have some range of color, but it's not as great as ours. But even if it was, I thought, Scout wouldn't have sat back and said, He would not have beheld the beauty of it. Anyway, what happened, then we kept walking. We enter into this new field with a path and very tall grass, and Scout gets into kind of a crouching position, like, and I'm thinking, oh gosh, now what? And then all of a sudden, not 10 feet away from where we were, two young deer, fawns, they're still spotted, jump up. And because the grass is high, they're like dolphins. And it is, I mean, and while that's happening, to the side I hear, which of course is the mother deer, very upset over this little incident. But, you know, for a moment, I was lost in wonder and in praise. And Scout, she is straining to go after those two little fawns. She has no eye for it. She doesn't just behold. Now here's the interesting thing. Every once in a while, we're walking, and then for no apparent reason, Scout will stop, and she'll look up. And then she'll do whatever she's been doing before. But in that moment of looking up, she looks the most intelligent, the most human. She is beholding, so it seems. We want to behold your glory. Not to consume it, not to put it into our pockets and say, that's one more thing I've seen. We're not tourists. We want to see it. I should think that every time you and I gather together here, deep down in your soul, there is the request, show me your glory. Show me your glory. So that I may behold it and not simply contemplate it, but enter into it. And if I just see it, everything will be all right. If I see your glory, I will be at rest. I will be okay no matter what the days ahead of me are. Show me your glory. The question, show me your glory, is so much like the Greeks in chapter, 11 of John, when they come to Philip and say, show us, we want to see Jesus. And you come and say, we want to see Jesus. And we want to see him in such a way that we see the glory of God in his face. You know, when Pilate beat Christ to a pulp, he has him stand in front of the crowd and he says, behold the man. See him. And the church has seen in that one and in that suffering the glory, the goodness of God, the mercy of God. We have heard him say, Yahweh, I am the faithful one. I will be always present to you. And when you hear that, on any given Sunday, you say, that was a good service. That's what I needed. I needed to see his glory. It has melted me. It has shaped me. It has given me the strength to go on. When Moses says, show me your glory, and God says, I will let all my goodness, there are some commentators who say, totally mistaken. That God, instead of showing Moses his glory, is doing something second best. His goodness. But his goodness is his glory. His mercy is his glory. His name, the fact that God speaks and says, Yahweh, the faithful one, that is his glory. These are vehicles that bring to us his glory. So God says, I will show you mercy. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no one shall see me and live. And the Lord continued, see, there is a place by me where you can stand on a rock, and while my glory, my goodness, passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by, and then I will take it away. Again, I mean, it's so loaded, but this idea that you cannot see my face, it underscores something that I think we need to remember, that there is a vast distance between God and us. There's simply a vast distance. So that no matter how long, how far along you are on holiness and saintliness and having visions, there are mysteries. God, in early in the 1960s, a cosmonaut, a Russian astronaut, went into outer space. When he came back, he said that he had not found God. It was a silly thing to say, but C.S. Lewis said something very profound. He said, what that cosmonaut said would be like Hamlet going into the attic of his castle, looking for Shakespeare, and then coming back and saying, there is no Shakespeare. Shakespeare is not one character among the many other characters. So God is not one character among the many other characters. He is not one more object among all the objects of the universe. One more Pacific Ocean or North America or you or me. God stands outside. My face you cannot see. You have no idea what you're asking when you're saying, I want to see your face. There's this vast difference. And it's such a good thing to remember. I mean, when you read our modern culture, maybe we work on that same level at times, but I know that this Christian Smith, who's a Christian sociologist, you know, he says there are too many people who see God as a kind of divine Santa Claus. They have no sense of this distance. My face you cannot see. To see it, well, you would die. But God says, you will be allowed to see some of my goodness as I pass by you. Now, again, you know, I mean, the thoughts there. What it seems to me at least to say, and this is not just me, this is what the church has at least said as I have listened to it, is that here God says, as I pass by, I will leave my fingerprints. You will see my footprints. And it is a fact that as God passes by, he leaves signs of his presence, shards of glory, the birth of a baby, two young fawns leaping through the high grass, the irresistibility of love, of human love, music. These are fingerprints, and as we behold them, we look through them, and we feel that they are but a thin veil before the face of God. And then there's the scriptures and the record that God has left behind. This table, this cross. You know, I've been thinking about this business of discipleship, and I think part of our living the Christian life is to have this table and this cross become larger and larger in our lives. C.S. Lewis, again, has this wonderful illustration about this. He says, you know, to look at the sun, to know the essence of the sun, it is not wise to look straight into it because you will burn your retina. Much better to know the essence of the light is to see what the light allows you to see what life the sun sustains. And that's exactly right. I mean, I think that as you grow older, you look back over your life and you say, ah, I had no idea, but there, the glory of God, the goodness of God, in these moments, as I follow after him, I see his glory, I see his goodness, I see his mercy, I hear him speak his name, the faithful one. And so as we, you know, stand at the on the threshold of a new church year, school year, as the summer comes to an end, we begin realizing that our lives, like the Israelites, are often messy. So messy. I mean, John Calvin says about our hearts, it's a perpetual factory of idols. It may not be a golden calf, but we are in hot pursuit of so many things that are not God and not holy, and we are a stiff-necked people. And so we come together to repent and to hear God say, you have found favor in my face, in my eyes. And then you and I saying, show us your ways that we may come to know you and find favor with you. And then above all else, show me your glory, I pray. Amen.